Second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside. Willie Donick is in Chicago. We'll check in with him in the final hour of the program after Elliot Friedman. Mitch Light from, well, we'll leave that up to, we'll just leave that blank for now. How about that? I did that in school a lot. Said, I'll come back to that.
How did that work out for you?
It didn't work out well. I was very, very average. Average student. You have been with Athlon Sports for a very long time.
18 plus years.
18 plus years.
It would have been 19 years in March.
Pre-kids. Yep. Pre-a lot of things.
Yes. My daughter was born 5 months after I started Athlon, and she's now in college, so it's
Isn't
been a long
crazy?
Time. Yes,
just think about that. You have a kid in college, and you started before she was born.
Yes, so great run there. Very fortunate. Loved, you know, 90 every. Yeah, as you guys know, jobs are jobs, and I'm sure you guys have a great gig here. But you know, it's 90% of what we do is fun. But sometimes jobs are jobs. But other than that, great run at Athlon Sports. Loved. Working on the magazine, love doing stuff like this. Because of that, I got the sideline gig at Vanderbilt, and so it's allowed me to do a lot of cool things. But I was ready for a new challenge. So yesterday was my last day, and I'll be starting a new gig on Monday. Which next time I'm on, we can talk about that. But just woke up today at 9 o'clock. Didn't have to go to work.
Wow, how about that?
Sort of you guys. You don't go to work till 10 o'clock. So.
Yeah, but we don't wake up at
9:40.
No. I wish. Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, you have a younger child, might you know. I don't have any kid duties in the morning.
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old that loves to talk to me very, very early in the morning.
That's unfortunate.
Yes, he wants to
don't
gab.
Talk to dad until
like, really
until 2 o'clock.
Can we do this later today?
Yes.
Do we have to do this now? So we will we'll have you on next week. We'll obviously react to the national championship game, and we'll announce your who you're going to be working for starting next week. It'll be really, really cool. Let's talk about that. And I brought this up earlier, and Chase looked at me, kind of gave the dog tilt of hearing a weird noise because we don't really think about this. And I don't think it's discussed enough. But Trevor Lawrence is 25-0 in his college career. He doesn't know what it's like to lose.
In fact, there was a story in multiple outlets. I think SI.com and The Athletic did a story. Went back to talk to the last quarterback that beat him, basically, in high school. I didn't see the story yet, but if there's junior year or sophomore year or whatever, because, you know, obviously a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence, his high school team's going to be good, you know,
right.
So I'm sure they had
right.
a great run there. Yeah, it's a weird story because at the end of last year, how well he played in the college football playoff, you had the NFL, he doesn't need these next 2 years in college, he should go right to the NFL. Which obviously he can't. But then this year he was, for an elite quarterback, he was average through the first month of the season. He was good, but he was throwing too many picks. And then we saw the North Carolina game, so we all just kind of forgot about him. You go, yeah, he's good, but he needs more seasoning. He's only a sophomore. Well, he's been fantastic in the latter two-thirds of the season. He was great using his legs. He's a good athlete in that game. So, yeah, he's known nothing but winning football games. And he is, next year he was going to be, you know, win or lose this game, he's going to be at the top or near the top of all the Heisman lists next year.
And there's already people doing the Zion Williamson stuff already. By the way, they haven't even played the national championship game. Do you know what I'm talking about? People are already throwing out there. He should just sit out next year. He's going to be the number one pick.
Shut
why would why would you play next year?
But and Zion's come out this week saying, you know, if all things being equal, he would have loved to go back to Duke because he enjoyed the experience, but he knew practically he couldn't. Well, Trevor Lawrence is like that. He's Mr. College Experience, and he kind of joked last year. Well, he didn't joke, but we all took it as a joke that he's like, yeah, I might stay 4 years. Why wouldn't I want to stay 4 years? The injury risk is what prevents that. We've seen what happened to Tua, but he is not one of those guys. I don't think there's many people. I think it's something that other people like to talk about.
Yep.
You're not going to find many college athletes, and not to get in this whole debate, but these kids, for the most part, they love being college football quarterbacks at Clemson or Alabama or wherever they are.
Could you imagine? Because he was committed to Tennessee, or I because he's from that area, right? I mean, because I've seen pictures of him in a, you know, a Tennessee.
I don't think Trevor Lawrence was ever committed. I think Hunter Johnson, the previous. We can look this up at the break. I think Hunter Johnson.
But they went after. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure Tennessee,
he was obviously in play.
Yeah, I'm sure Tennessee recruited him. But just to, if I'm correct, Hunter Johnson, who was a five-star, I believe was originally committed to Tennessee, then committed to Clemson. He's the one that transferred to Northwestern and kind of flamed out. But we can look that up.
My point is, everybody, because I've had this conversation with people, like, what if? Like, had he ended up, being from Knoxville, that area, had he ended up at Tennessee, what would Tennessee look like? And my argument to that is, well, you got to look at the rest of Clemson, too. I mean, Dabo Swinney has built, it's more than just the quarterback. Obviously, he's a big part of it, maybe the biggest. But the pieces around him at Clemson have been tremendous, and that was something that Tennessee has struggled at. I mean, it's not just quarterback. They haven't built the team. Butch Jones didn't build the proper team that they needed to have, and thus he's not there anymore.
Right, and you know, look at Alabama early in the Saban era. They won titles. They won an extremely high level without elite quarterback play. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, A.J. McCarron's in the NFL, and Greg McElroy was a good college quarterback, but Sims was there 1 year. So it's more recent that we've seen these elite quarterbacks. I mean, good teams have good quarterbacks, but sort of the last 5-10 years, it's sort of like great roster, quarterback who doesn't kill you, elite running backs and all that, but it's just with Fields and Tua and Trevor Lawrence, it seems like this has been sort of the era of the elite quarterback raising those offenses, you know, sort of like Alabama. Like I said, their defenses, they won with defense and just solid offense. Now it's almost the script has flipped, and Joe Burrow, the one guy I didn't mention, that's elevated that program.
How do you think this plays out? I can't wait for Monday night. Yeah, I think it's going to be fantastic.
I think the Tigers are going to win. That's what I think.
That's bold. Yeah. Is that why you guys have him on the air for comment?
You can't get that stuff anywhere else.
Yeah, I'd never thought of that.
Yeah,
wait is the key word, because we've had to wait a long time.
Now, what is the story behind that?
It does make sense. I don't want to botch this, but basically when the college football playoff was formed, the semifinals were going to be on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day every year, depending on the Rose Bowl, because God forbid, you know, you have to move the Rose Bowl, which we don't. And then, so the contracts were set for the championship games the next Saturday, like not the 2-3 days later, a week and a half later. So just think, if the college football semifinals were on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day this year, you couldn't have the finals 4 or 5 days later. So it was a week and a half out. They moved this year's to the previous Saturday, so it won't happen again. But to answer your question, I like LSU. I picked them before the college football playoff. I think Clemson's obviously really, really good. I think LSU is a little bit more complete. I think something has to go strange for Clemson to win. Like a special teams touchdown, a pick six here or there. I think LSU can kind of just go out and play its normal game and win. I think it's going to be – both defenses have really good players. I think it's going to be an offensive game. I know that's not, you know, groundbreaking if you watch these two teams. They're both extremely balanced. I think if you're looking for an edge one way or the other, I think LSU's maybe defensive backfield, their cornerbacks, might have the edge a little bit over Clemson's wide receivers versus the other way around. I think LSU's wide receivers can get open against Clemson's defensive backs. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be a big factor. Like, LSU can beat you in the passing game with the running back, Edwards-Helaire. Thaddeus Moss is an underrated weapon, and then their elite wide receivers. I don't know if Clemson's that dynamic in the passing game. I mean, we're just, you know, these are elite teams. We're just trying to poke holes.
Let me ask you this. Is it fair to say last year's Clemson team that won it all and destroyed Alabama in the national championship game, top to bottom, is a more talented team than this year's
team? Yes, and I don't care what the defensive numbers say. And they might have changed throughout the year. Clemson's defensive numbers were better this year than last year, which you'd say that's amazing because they lost those four defensive linemen. But their schedule's not as good this year. You know, the ACC is worse this year than it was last year. But, yes, even though Lawrence was a freshman, he was playing so well at the end of the year. The receivers, like guys like Justin Ross, even though he was a freshman, was peaking at the end of last year. So I agree that last year's Clemson team was better than this year's Clemson team. And I thought Ohio State was better than Clemson. I'm not sure, because of the holidays, I'm not sure if we've talked since the semifinal. you know, Clemson won the game. That's the point, to score more points. But I thought Ohio State was the better team that day. But I thought I would take LSU over either one of those teams.
Is this going to be a high-scoring affair?
I think so. I would be surprised if the losing team doesn't score at least 28 points.
I was going to say, do you think you have to at least be in the 30s to win?
37-30 is my prediction. Okay. There. I don't see a blowout either way.
69.5 is the over/under, MC.
So I said six. Yeah. So I guess I'd go the under if 37-30. But I am. Look forward to every title game in any sport you follow. You can kind of convince yourself talk yourself into, whether it's Alabama, Clemson, part three or part four. But just this one, because LSU's been so good and they're fun to watch, and then you got the Trevor Lawrence factor, two great quarterbacks. I'm really looking forward to this one.
I think it's truly the two best teams in the country. I think they got it right.
Well, right? I think Ohio State's right there,
too. No slight to Ohio State, but I mean – Clemson beat them, so that therefore, sure. If Ohio State won, we would have said the same thing. It's the two best teams in the country,
right? I don't feel like we're watching a Final Four where Cinderella snuck in, and sure they deserve to be there. But if both teams play well, one team's going to win by 20 points. I mean, I think LSU's the superior team, but I'm picking LSU. But if we're talking next Tuesday and you say Clemson wins the game, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Do you think that this layoff affects them at all?
It's hard to say. It's a long time. It's a long time.
I mean, think about from their last conference championship games to today, and they've played one game in between. How big that gap is,
right? And they've had the holidays and the awards tour season and all that. It's really up to the coaches to keep these guys. You know, motivated is not the right word. They're motivated. They're playing in the. National championship game, but to keep them sharp, I think it helps them get healthier. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who played some with that hamstring injury, I'm sure he's healthier. So in that regard, but that is you can be rusty and on the opening kickoff. If someone doesn't do their job, they lose their concentration, and there's a touchdown on the opening kickoff. I mean, it can change the game. Obviously, both teams are facing it. It's not like in the regular season where we say one team has a bye, that team had to play Alabama the week before, they're going to be banged up. Both teams have the same situation, but I think it's an interesting part of the game.
Clemson's fan base doesn't have to take a back seat to anybody. This game is in New Orleans. They're going to have to take a back seat. How much does that affect the game? Because LSU's fans, like I said, Clemson is going to show up, but they're not going to get in the building like LSU. It is going to be – it's going to feel more like an LSU home game.
On that note, though, if you're a Clemson fan like 5 years ago, you just say, you know what, unless you're just completely loaded, we're not scheduling any vacations. We're just going to college football playoff games, two a year for the next 5 years. I mean, how much travel they've had. But, yeah, to your point, I expect there to be – you know, I don't know what the Superdome seats – let's say it seats 80,000. I would expect like a 65-35 split, and it's LSU. You know, this LSU team seems just a little bit more special to LSU fans.
74-295.
Okay, so
75,000, and you think it'll be 65-35?
Yeah, around that. That would be my guess. You know, just everyone loves Ed O. Try to find a coach whose job means more to him. I know every coach loves their school, and they want to win for their school, but it just seems like a little bit more with Ed O. So, yeah, I expect it to be I usually don't like crowd shots in games, just like show the game, whatever. But, you know, starting about, 10, 15 years ago, that's the thing to do. There's a play, you show the crowd. I just love watching LSU fans celebrate. They just seem to be having such a good time.
We'll come back more with Mitch Light. Vanderbilt has hired two new coordinators. Mississippi State may be getting close to...
I am not one of the coordinators. I know I keep hinting about my new job.
That is not it. The cat's out of the bag. We've seen the names. Neither one of them are named Mitch
Light. I think
Light.
You're the new Mississippi State head coach. That's what I think.
Why? Just because I have, I'm on my computer here and I have houses in Starkville up on there? Is that why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Investigative reporting. Yeah. Chase.
Look, I'm the best.
We'll come back more with Mitch Light on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
And Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, hanging out with Mitch Light, esteemed college football analyst and Vanderbilt sideline reporter.
Esteemed, thank
esteemed.
You.
That's what I'm going to call you from now on. So a couple of I wanted to mention this as we wrap up the national championship, because I was going to bring this up at the end. There are four Mr. Football winners from Tennessee that could be on the field at the same time, potentially five. But Jacoby Stevens of LSU, Jacob Phillips, T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers. Amari Rodgers, of course, the son of T. Martin. I think that's cool to kind of have that Tennessee connection with some of these players. I remember Jacoby Stevens when he was a senior at Oakland High School, and Jim Harbaugh actually had his satellite camp at Oakland and went out there, and Jacoby Stevens was one of the featured guys, of course. But now to see him in the national championship with LSU is pretty cool.
Yeah, LSU's done a good job recruiting the mid-state. And, you know, you guys have all been around here for a while, as have I. You know, the quality of the high school football players increased a lot in the past 10, 15 years, just the amount of, you know, prospects out there. And, you know, it's sort of like, obviously it's not like Atlanta area or Florida, but it seems like most schools recruit down. You know, Master Teague at Ohio State, you know, there's – every major program kind of dips into Middle Tennessee and grabs a guy every few years.
Well, and a lot of these names, you know, I was able to talk about on Friday nights when I did the high school show, and so now to see them at the next level. But moving on into some coaching openings, that one was kind of a surprise, not a surprise. The other one, not a surprise at all, because Matt Rhule was destined for the NFL in my mind. So Baylor now open, but Mississippi State is open, and could Mike Leach finally come to the SEC? I've seen reports that he's interviewed.
That's you know, this is the time of year or when stuff's going on. Who do you believe, and you know how valid are those reports? And that makes sense. You know, the thing about Leach has kind of been he might not be a good fit at a school with a huge profile, with a ton of media attention. Now, every SEC school has its media attention, but that's why we kind of threw out Arkansas. That kind of tucked away in Northwest Arkansas, and it's, you know, is it sort of like Pullman, Washington, or Lubbock, Texas? Well, Starkville's probably the most outposty of outposts in the SEC. So maybe, I mean, that would be, you know, we talked off air, you know, that, imagine having him and Lane Kiffin in the same division and you know, with Nick Saban and Ed O. So I think we've, as college football fans and observers, we'd all kind of like to see what that offense would look like going against LSU, Auburn, you know, in Alabama, those type of defenses. He's done a good job, kind of a down year at Washington State this year, but won 10 or 11 games last year. He definitely, you know, he wants to return to the quote-unquote big time. He's been in the SEC. He got his, you know, at Kentucky. He was the offensive coordinator there. So it'll be fun. You know, there's a report on Twitter yesterday that Sarkisian had come to terms.
Yeah, I saw that too.
It was one of those things where it was retweeted by a couple people, but then if it's not retweeted like immediately by people you trust in the business, then it didn't happen. So I'm not saying that won't happen. I think he's the guy they talked to. So, yeah, that's interesting. And then,
am I wrong to say that I'm – not that impressed with Steve Sarkisian as I feel like others are. I do not think that would be a good hire for Mississippi State. That's me.
Yeah, if I'm a Mississippi State fan, I'm not totally fired up about it. I like that more than Todd Grantham, another guy they supposedly talked to. Sark did a good job at Washington. He took over the program that was really down, got them competitive. They beat USC 1 year. He left after his third year, after they kind of got to the 7-6 level, and went to USC, and then he had his off-the-field troubles at USC. So and then, you know, kind of got rehabilitated at Alabama, went to Atlanta, didn't do a great job with the Falcons, I don't think, but, you know,
right,
a lot of coordinators would do a good job with Alabama. So I'd be interested to see. I wouldn't immediately say that I don't think that's going to work. But if I'm Mississippi State, I don't think I'd go that direction.
On Mississippi State, I know you have to recruit outside of your state, but recruiting in state, especially the state of Mississippi, is so important. Do you think it – because – Joe Moorhead was there 2 years. I think he did an okay job, but it was only 2 years.
Had a winning record.
So do you think that their hand got forced when Ole Miss hired Lane Kiffin? That, okay, maybe we need to go get somebody that has a little more
star. They just signed a top
power.
25 class, though. That's the thing. Yeah. For them, for Mississippi State, you know, signing a top 25 national class is very good. I don't know. You know, there were reports about some cultural issues. There were fights. Garrett Schroeder, Schrader, the backup quarterback, or it's part-time quarterbacks, got in a fight at practice. I don't know if they were using those things as an excuse to get rid of him. You know, that's kind of the convenient. If you want to make a change, you find some problems in the program. Again, Dan Mullen did a great job at Mississippi State. if you remove that, and I know you can't because it's now part of their history, but if you remove that time frame and look at what Joe Moorhead did, going to two bowl games, and then you fire him for that. So if there truly were off-the-field issues where John Cohen looked at it and said, you know what, he's not the guy moving forward, then you have to make the move. If it was a panic move because Lane Kiffin's there and, you know, we don't really necessarily think this is the long-term answer, then it becomes a little more questionable. But I don't – it's kind of dangerous territory to fire a coach after – a month after yeah. your season ends, basically, because your rival hired someone else.
So before I get to Vanderbilt, what about Baylor? Matt Rhule goes to the Carolina Panthers, gets paid a ton of money to make the jump to the NFL. What are they going to do? I know it's late in the game, but we yeah, see this from time to time.
Yeah, you know, Joey McGuire, I think his name is, was an assistant there. He was mm-hmm. he wasn't a coordinator, but he was assistant head coach. If they want continuity, I think that's the way they go. Baylor is a interesting job because it has two times now they have won at a high level. Now you can question the Art Briles, the right. the methods, the tactics they got to get good. But that's the way I look at a program. If you've been good under multiple coaches, it's a good program. Like I always use Cincinnati. It's not a, you know, Power Five program anymore. But they have been good under multiple head coaches. So they got a program there. Some other programs, they've only been good under one coach. If you don't have a good program if you're only good under one coach. So I think Baylor has proven that it can succeed in the Big 12. You know, Waco's not the greatest place. It's not a huge metropolitan area, but it's close to a lot of players. So I think it's a desirable job now. And I think whether it's in-house or there's some talk that, you know, Billy Napier from Louisiana Lafayette, who did not evidently was not interested in Mississippi State, that he'd be a good fit there.
Vanderbilt has the Todd and Ted show as Todd Fitch takes over as the offensive coordinator.
Excellent Adventure. You're probably too young for Bill and Ted's.
Oh, I know that one.
Okay.
No worry.
Okay.
And Ted Roof.
Did you see the second one?
I didn't see the okay. second one. I saw the first
one. That's, but, all yeah. you, that's all you need to see.
Ted Roof takes over the defense. And I'll start with him because he was on the staff in 2010, was the defensive coordinator in 2010 when Auburn won the national championship. There's a pedigree there with him. And so as I was reading up on him when they sent the release, seems like that he could be a good fit.
Yeah,
good
I think
hire.
So. He's been a head coach at Duke. He did not yep. succeed there, but that's when like no one was winning games at Duke. And, you know, he's been to Georgia Tech. He's been very good at a lot of places. He's a veteran. He's an older guy. So I think that from what I hear, they're paying him quite a bit of money to get him from App State. And, you know, he was at Georgia Tech before that. So, yeah, I think based on the circumstances, everyone knows the circumstances at Vanderbilt right now. Derek Mason was retained, but you can't say he's on the most solid of footing. So you're not exactly hiring at a position of strength. So I think they went out and did a good job with that hire.
I don't know much about Todd Fitch. What can you explain about him?
You know, I follow this stuff very closely from my job. I knew the name as the coordinator, but he's not, you know, he wasn't a guy that I knew a ton about. You know, spent some time at Boston College. Louisiana Tech, there's kind of a debate's not the right word. Like, who really called the plays? It's Skip Holtz's offense, so who called the plays? You know, I know Adam Sparks, the Tennesseans, tweeted out some stuff that he's going to have some stuff coming out about that. You know, I think the style is good. You know, I think Derek Mason came in, tried to be more power football. They had some success when Kyle Shermer was here. But what we saw this year, if you don't have a good offensive line, well, obviously there were quarterback problems too, but if you don't have the offensive line, it's really hard. And Todd Fitch's kind of MO, spread the field, kind of overcome deficiencies in mm-hmm. the offensive line, getting the ball out quickly. So I think that's the way they needed to go with this hire. You know, there's a lot to being an offensive coordinator. Basically, it's two main facets, your system and your ability to call plays. There's a lot of coaches out there who have a great system, but, you know, I think that's one of the more underrated things in sports is calling plays, especially in an up-tempo, you know, plays over. What do you got next? What are your next two or three plays? So I think kind of on a tangent, talk to other coaches. That's what made Bobby Petrino so good.
Yeah.
People said he was a master play caller, really knew the tempo of the game. So if Todd Fitch hasn't called plays recently for Louisiana Tech, that might be a little bit of an adjustment, but I like the system he's bringing in.
And he's going to have a quarterback battle because they brought in, was it three that
yeah,
they signed?
Well, you know, a true freshman from Weatherford, Texas. Mm-hmm. Ken Seals is his name, I believe, who's an early enrollee who – in fact, you know, held off Baylor late. Some Texas schools came after him. Supposedly, he's a really good quarterback. I think he will be in position to win the job. They signed kind of an unheralded junior college guy who started his career at Hawaii, and then they signed more of an athletic dual threat kid from Atlanta that they signed, you know, they got right before signing day there. So yeah. it'll be an interesting battle. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the true freshman from Texas.
What do you know about this Cade Mays situation?
It's crazy.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And I saw that he was transferring, and his recruitment led to me coming up with a feature idea at Athlon Sports. Because I, you know, this is, he was being recruited, five-star kid from Knoxville. His dad played at Tennessee, and he commits to Georgia. So I'm thinking, wow, that's, you know. So we did a story last year about elite high school, elite players who go to their dad's, a rival school of their dad's. It made me think to Barry Sanders. Now, Barry Sanders wasn't recruited by Oklahoma. That's part of the story. But I interviewed Barry Sanders once for something at Athlon, and he told me that his dad was such a big Oklahoma fan that his dad rooted for Oklahoma against Oklahoma State when they played. Like, literally, his dad was in the stands rooting against his son. Now, that's what he told me was an embellishment. I don't know. But there's been other, like Casey Thompson is the backup quarterback at Texas. Bouchel's coming back, so he won't be the starter. Not Bouchel. Who's the quarterback at Texas? Bouchel's the one that transferred.
He transferred. Yeah.
So, but and his dad, Charles Thompson, was quarterback at Oklahoma in the 80s, and he hosts a talk show in Norman, Oklahoma, and all that. And so his son goes to the rivals. So we featured those two guys. We featured Cade Mays and his dad about what it's like to sit in the stands watching your son play against, you know, your school's rival. So that's kind of sort of a tangent there. But if he gets immediate eligibility at Tennessee, I guess Trey Smith's holding a press conference today.
In 30 minutes.
Yeah. But if Mays is immediately eligible with some of the young guys they had, that could be a real strength on that offense.
Now, his attorney, Tom Mars, I think is the same guy, yes, who represented Justin Fields, right, who got him eligible,
yes,
immediately at Ohio State.
I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of this, but I have to believe they were pretty confident that he'd get immediate eligibility because he is an NFL prospect, and he can declare after next year. So it doesn't really make sense to transfer after your true sophomore. I think he was a true sophomore this year.
And his brother is on is a freshman at UT, right?
Right, right. So, you know, when you're that good, do you really want to sit out one year and then just to play one year? You know, he's not going to be a fifth-year senior at Tennessee. He might be a fourth-year guy. So I just have a feeling that they're pretty confident in their ability to get him eligible.
All right, more with Mitch Light on the other side here at Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Slide in studio with us. We've hit on the national championship game. It's Monday night in New Orleans, Clemson and LSU. That is going to be quite the contest. A lot of kids are coming out and saying that they are going to enter the NFL draft for 2020. We'll find out what Trey Smith is going to do coming up in about 25 minutes in Knoxville. I believe all signs are pointing toward he's leaving, right? I mean,
I don't think you have a press conference.
I don't know why you have a press conference. Yeah,
Jordan Matthews was the only one I remember.
I was going to say, there have been examples.
He had a press conference to announce he was coming back.
Didn't Cutler have one?
I don't know if he had a press conference. He issued a release. Yeah, I remember saying.
Well, I remember because I was in high school. I was like a junior in high school, and I did a job shadow over at Channel 5, and we went over there one day.
Maybe
he announced that he was coming back. But it was weird because he was in like practice gear.
Was it a practice? I mean, was it a press conference?
No, it was.
Was he just working out or something?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he was practicing.
Maybe
maybe
it was just an announcement and the media's, can we come by? And they said, yeah, we'll make him available, but it's not an official, you know.
And it was in the spring, too. It wasn't now. It was like it was weird. I couldn't remember because it was a while ago. But
we suspect Trey Smith is going to announce he's leaving, right?
Yeah, I would think so. But, you know, I don't know if this Cade Mays news has been, hey, maybe I'll, you know, come back and play with another five-star.
Well, the question is, where are you putting everybody?
They'll find room.
I know.
Well, they moved, you know, right. Smith was a tackle by trade, right? And they moved him into guard this year. So maybe they can trade him. They have an excess of
a trade.
Yeah, maybe. What do they need? Maybe they're losing some wide receivers. Maybe they can trade him to Alabama for a wide receiver.
Could you imagine if they had trades in college football?
Man, would that be fun.
I'm sorry, son. We really enjoyed recruiting you, but we have an opportunity to shore up our defensive backfield. You know, you're going to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah, you've been shipped out of here.
Right. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah.
What did you make of Matt Rhule's contract in Carolina?
It was big.
Yes, it was.
And I don't know too much about it, but evidently, is it Tepper, the owner there, is evidently has a lot of money.
He's rich.
Yeah, so like...
Very rich.
People tried to make something of it, but it doesn't affect the salary cap. It's you can spend that type of money on coaches in the NFL.
Understand, but I believe this is right. How many college coaches, guys that came from college and have had any... Like when... Other than Jim Harbaugh won playoff games in San Francisco, can you give me another example? Nick Saban didn't. There's.
It seems like we had this discussion and we forgot about a guy a few weeks ago. We had this discussion, the track record
is atrocious. Petrino didn't. Spurrier didn't. I mean, they have. We know the list is really long of there and gone. No success.
Yeah, and Matt Rhule is actually, he spent 1 or 2 years with the Giants. He's been a college coach for most of his career, I believe. Don't have his resume in front
Chip
of me.
Chip Kelly was another one, failure.
He seems like some of those guys, like Chip Kelly, were kind of hired for their offense. And at the time, it's changed now, but at the time, NFL teams weren't running those college offenses. Matt Rhule's a defensive guy by trade. He just seems to have a little bit of different – this one just has a different feel to it than going and plucking the next hot young college coach. I don't know why. Maybe just because, as Chase alluded to before, you follow coaching. Everyone kind of knew Matt Rhule eventually was going to be an NFL coach. He was coveted by NFL teams. He interviewed with the Jets last year and evidently would have taken the job, but they didn't kind of let him make his own staff. They told him he had to retain some assistants. So he's like – there'll be other opportunities. And
Kingsbury, the 1 year so far, not very good. I'm not here to poop on Matt Rhule. I know he's really good. But let me just kind of temper this a little bit. He did it at Temple and Baylor. It's not like he did it at...
Well, you could argue that it made it even more impressive.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But anybody can win it.
That's Florida. Fine. And his resume is really impressive at places that... They're not very impressive very often, right? Sometimes you have those years like he's had, the last couple of Baylor and the three at Temp. I mean, it looks good, but it's not like he was in there battling in the SEC West week in and week out or in the Big Ten. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting. And maybe he's going to be the boy wonder and it's an incredible move. There's very little track record of college coaches that go in and have success. And two, we haven't really seen it on this big – I mean, he had two cracks at Oklahoma this year and lost them both. And albeit close games, I get it. Had Oklahoma on the ropes the first time around, should have beat them. But he didn't. They didn't win the games.
Yeah. And he went, 1-10 2 years ago, 7-6 last year. I think he has a good temperament for it. One thing I'll follow up about the money situation where it's, you can pay anyone, you can pay a coach whatever you want. It doesn't affect your team. And I don't know if this is trying to read too much into it. The only negative I can see there is the players and the teams, like, who's this guy from Baylor? We're paying him all this money. And if they don't respect him, he's just making more money than some of the players. Would that be an issue? I don't know. I'm just trying to poke holes in from a different angle than you are. But I think the Giants reportedly were very interested. They claim they balked at his price, that Carolina offered him this, and they said, okay, go ahead and take it. Did you see the New York, one of the New York pages, papers back page the next day? Because the Giants hired Joe Judge.
Right.
Said Judge over Rhule was the headline.
Nice. Nice.
And
very nice.
The New York papers are good. They're not. They're good for that.
Yeah, they are definitely, especially the Post. They're good for that for sure. Which quarterback coming out? We know Fromm, Eason, those guys. Other than the obvious of Tua, let's stay away from him. But the other guy, the other grouping of guys, which one intrigues you the most at the next level?
I'm trying to.
And you can throw Herbert in there. That's fine.
Yeah. Herbert does too. He's a guy that can make all the throws. I throw Eason and Herbert kind of in the same category where they look the part, they can make all the throws, but just seem to make timely mistakes. Herbert in some big games, the Arizona State game, if he doesn't throw the ball away a couple times,
they're not look good.
Yeah, they're in the playoff there. So you know, I think both those guys are intriguing. I think Fromm is very intriguing because, you know, his star, the shine is kind of off the star, off of his performance in recent years. Is it because the Georgia didn't have the playmakers at wide receiver? Is it because of the play calling? Is he not dynamic enough? We don't know. We'll find out. You know, he's a smart kid. He's, you know, he's the type of guy you want leading your team. But are NFL teams alarmed by his lack of production? Look at his stats late in the year. His completion percentage wasn't great. But again, he's not thrown to Alabama and LSU wide receivers this year. Lawrence Cager was hurt late in the year. So he's when I, you know, this is a much lower tier. But I saw Cole McDonald, the Hawaii quarterback, has declared he threw for a ton of yards and a ton of touchdowns, but also threw for a lot of interceptions. So it's you know, and then Tua obviously is going to be one of the more intriguing ones about what team, how high does he go, what team takes a chance on him without, you know, being able to watch him basically perform because of health reasons. I'm probably missing. I'm kind of in my brain kind of
well,
scanning,
I mean,
scanning the
you know, there's this kid from Utah State that nobody's really
watched. Jordan Love is good. He's a good quarterback. I watched their bowl game against Kent State. And by the way, Kent State's quarterback in that game, Crum, was phenomenal throwing and running. That was a fun game. Love is, you know, he's a good quarterback. Did not play well against LSU. I think they might have only scored 6 points in that game. Is that a supporting cast question? But he's, you know, depending on where you look, he's in the top five on some people's quarterback lists.
So you say 37-30 LSU.
37-30 LSU. And if the under,
I could see that.
Yeah.
Is this a final possession deal?
I hope so. I would love to see this game go down to the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And
I want back and forth. Yeah. That's what I don't care about defense in this game.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to see the offenses highlighted.
These teams have fun players, elite offensive players. Let's watch
fun
them.
Fun coaches.
Yeah, let's watch them do their thing. Again, to boil it down, I would say Clemson needs to play error-free more than LSU does. I think LSU could overcome some turnovers, some problems, a special team score. I think Clemson needs to play a cleaner game to win.
Good to see you. We'll talk about it next week, and we'll discuss who you are. I mean,
he's
know who
an
you
esteemed
are,
college football analyst,
but
in
who you're officially with. But he'll have a different title.
I'll have a job next week.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Good
to see you.
I got some time to screw it up.
Thanks for doing this. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour next. We will review our silly underdog picks.
Yeah, we will.
And crown our champ to kick off the third hour. That's coming up at high noon. Kenny Vaccaro at 12:30,
yeah.
By the way. We're excited about that. Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. We've had an A-list guest list this week.
And it continues tomorrow. Brian Billick at 10:15.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Youngblood at 11.
There you go.
That'd be cool.
And more things to come
well. And a birdie has told me that D-Mace might stick around for the opening segment of tomorrow's show. We haven't really gotten to talk to him.
He's just stick around for Brian Billick.
I know. That'd be cool.
As Jeff Fisher said with us yesterday, because we brought up Trent Dilfer, who joined us the day before that. He said he'd be willing to come in and do a show.
Oh,
be on with us.
That's going to happen. We're going to make that happen.
And he said, you know, bring Trent in too.
I think that would be fantastic.
Okay.
Get those two together, live and in person, tell stories, have some trash talking. That would be good.
Had Justin McFarland from Fox 17 over here this morning.
Yeah, I saw you doing some TV.
That'll be for tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
That'll air tomorrow morning. But Justin's a guy who's been around this market for a long time.
Yeah.
And he remembers the beginning years of the Titans. So we got into, you know, kind of what we've talked about, and I've brought this up. And he asked me about, you know, what is this season, what is this run done for the Titans? And I said, you know, we got into it and got into that discussion. And I think what's interesting about the magical runs, and I told him, I said, no matter how this plays out in Baltimore, it's stating the obvious.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, my voice is...
You're
I'm struggling over here. If the, you know, this continues, that it's stating the obvious. Of course, it's just going to grow and grow and grow. That's duh. But even if it ends on Saturday night, the body of work this year to do it, to have the start that they had, and to overcome that and finish strong and get in and then win and knock out the Patriots in Foxborough, I've said there's going to be real momentum. And they bring back Tannehill. They bring back Henry. There's going to be real, real momentum in the offseason, and depending on what else they do, and then going into next season. I said, but what's always key, just like in the Predators run, I referenced the Predators, because this has been a nice window. But really the window is the bulk, the heavy lifting has been the last 3-plus years, right?
Right.
The run to the Stanley Cup Final, the President's Trophy follow-up year, where you're the best team in hockey in the regular season. And then, and of course, that means you won the division. And then the following year, you win the division again. Yep. They had never won a division before, and they're now over 20 years in the league. So those were all first. And then you had a Vezina Trophy win. So there, all these things happened, really, in that.
Poyle won GM of the Year.
Poyle won. So this 3.5-year window. And I said, what's been critically important to those consecutive sellouts during this during this time? I forgot what the number, I don't know, what are they at, 175? I don't even know what the number is.
I think it's
175. Consecutive sellouts for the Predators. But what I said is important, and this is what the Titans have to keep in mind. This is the first time I have felt real movement. Like that TV audience, the TV ratings, almost a 40.
Yeah.
That's real movement. Those were old school numbers. Those were back in the glory days in this market.
Of Jeff Fisher and Derek Mason and those,
Eddie George, Steve McNair, Frank Wycheck, Javon Kurse, that group. There's been a real movement. But what's always key on that, when you feel things good, the good happening, you feel change happening with a fan base, with coverage, with talk, you have to sustain it. You have to come back the next year and follow up. If you have an average or below average year, it all dissipates.
Right.
The important thing is, now that you have this movement, this growth, you have real enthusiasm, can you follow it up the next year? Like I said, no matter what happens in all of it, it's still going to be good, even if it ends Saturday. This has been a positive. Then can you take that next step about winning a division title? You know, just like the Predators, it's like.
And they haven't done it
a lot. No. There have been how many times have they won the division?
Have they won the South? Probably, I'm going to say
zero.
Two or three. No, yeah, they're 08. And then
was that the beginning of the South?
Yeah, let's see here. They've won.
Was that still the South?
Yeah. 2002 is when it became the South, because that's when Houston joined.
That's when Houston came into
the
league.
And they were in the Central before that.
So you had. You didn't win it in 99. You didn't win the division.
No.
Because Jacksonville went 14-2. The next year you won.
Yep.
2000, you win the division in 2000.
I think they've won the South twice, but I'm looking.
Well, 08 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were the number one seed again.
So they, okay, here we go. So since they have been the Titans.
Since they've been here.
They have won 3 division titles. The Central in 2000. The South in 2002 and 2008.
Okay.
That's it.
It's not much. So 2 division titles for the Predators, 3 for the Titans.
Yep. And here's the crazy thing. They won in the NFL since the merger. They won the AFC Central 3 times in their history, 91, 93, and 2000. And before that, it was all AFL division titles.
How about win a division title? How about a home playoff game?
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened since 08. How about something like that? I mean, there are other steps they can take. That's what I want to see. Can they keep it going no matter what happens? And to me, the next steps are win a division title. Have a home playoff game.
Yeah.
That's how you keep things rolling.
I agree. And I want to see I want to see the next steps for the city. That's why I think the Predators making the change that they made when they did it is big, because how many times have we dreamed about both teams kind of making a run at it at the same time? And you have Nashville SC that's coming into the fray too as the third major sports team in this market. So I think building momentum as a city, as a sports town, is huge too. But I'm with you. They have to keep this going, because Mike Mularkey got it to a certain place. They said, you know what? It's not going to go anywhere. It's not good enough. We're going to make a change. Well, so far, Mike Vrabel, with more talent, has done the same thing. Now, that could all change this weekend. If they win, then you can say Vrabel has taken more steps. But they just have to keep this train going.
Joe, what's up?
Hey, Darren, I just had to call in because, you know, and tell you how wrong your take is, which is, of course, the beauty of sports radio, talking about, you know, momentum going into next season. And we've seen, if you know, history has shown us this, and it's documented that, you know, you come off a great season. Of course, we all know that's no guarantee of next year, like you guys just brought up. You know, the 99 Titans making it all the way to the Super Bowl. Expectations for 2000 or even higher, they're one and done. And this has happened numerous times. We could go through the whole list of teams where they come off a great season, and going into the next year where they actually had a better team, you think, wow, this is it. We're really going to get over the hump. And it's like we had talked about before, you know, okay, they won a wild card playoff game, but like I told you, in the last seven seasons, no team that's played on wild card weekend has ended up in the Super Bowl. So with that being the case, you know, like we said, they're 60 minutes away from accomplishing anything at all. Right now, yeah, they won the game, and that was against a team that, of course, they matched up well against, and they were ready to be knocked off their perch. But, you know, this weekend will tell us everything, and if they do that, then, okay, we might have a little something going. And even if we do win that game Saturday night, you know what? That brings no momentum into next season at all. We saw that with Mularkey, with the thrilling playoff victory over the Chiefs, and we thought to ourselves going into the next season, it's going to be even better. And what happened? He gets whacked, and it's because he wouldn't make changes on his staff, and all of a sudden they weren't a playoff team. So we'll see how it plays out. And like I said, the beauty of sports radio, got to totally disagree with your take about momentum. And as always, guys, thanks so much for taking the call. Love the show. Have a great day.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
You too. I don't know how you could not say this is momentum, because they didn't have Derrick Henry in the last year of Mularkey. Derrick Henry wasn't viewed the way he is today.
Right.
I mean, It's been since Eddie George since you've heard a running back's name chanted in the stands.
Yeah.
Okay, you have Ryan Tannehill, where real optimism.
And DeMarco Murray had one good year. You know, Chris Johnson. There were probably some CJ chants when he was here.
Yeah. I mean, he obviously had a 2,000-yard season. It was an 8-8 season.
Right, but then in 2008, I mean, he was hurt. You know, he got hurt for that in the playoff game, so.
Well, he shared the load with Lindell.
Yeah.
They were, remember?
Yeah.
Lightning,
was that his rookie year?
Lightning and Thunder, whatever they were called.
Smash and Dash.
Smash and Dash, whatever.
But, hey, it worked.
It did.
It did work.
But, I mean, if you don't think that this is momentum, I mean, almost a 40 rating for TV, I'm just telling you, it is. I've watched the TV ratings for 15 years in this market, 20 years.
People,
as long as they've been available, and these are days – this is going back to the early days.
Yeah, and I know there are Titans fans, and then the Titans themselves don't necessarily want to hear this, but there are a large chunk of people that when the things weren't very good at the end of Bud Adams, the Ken Whisenhunt era, when it was just trash, people didn't care. They just were like, you know what? We got a football team, but I don't really care about them. And they didn't pay attention. They just didn't. You know. You were on the airwaves. You know that they didn't care.
Well, the next step, too, is get him to come to Nissan Stadium. That's the next step.
That's an NFL problem. Because as we talked about, they've had record lows or 15-year lows in stadium attendance. It's not just the Titans. That's a league problem, that people just aren't going to the games as much anymore. So that's a bigger issue.
You have to be winning, too, to fix that problem.
Yes.
All right, we'll come back, and we will crown our silly underdog champ to kick off the third hour. We do that next.